Okay, let's start here. Quick recap, we started talking about a new scheme called demand-paged virtual memory. So essentially what we have done here is take the concept of paging, okay, which allows you to chop the address space into fixed size chunks and relax the assumption that the process has to be contiguously stored. So we take that approach and then we relax it further. Okay. We no longer assume that the process has to be resident in RAM. We assume that there is going to be a swap space where the processes will be stored and pages of the processes will be fetched on demand into memory as the process executes instructions that access those pages. Okay, that's the basic idea. So we looked at how one could go about doing this. Okay, we basically said that to make this, so we also introduced this notion of a page fault, which occurs whenever the process executes an instruction, okay, which touches a page that's not in memory, okay, and then you have to go take a trap, you have to go fetch that page, update the page tables, update the TLB, lot of bookkeeping happens, and then the process resumes execution, okay, and then the page that it was trying to access is now in RAM. Okay. The important thing is to make all of this completely transparent to a user program. The user program shouldn't know that all of this is actually happening underneath. And to do that, you have to be careful of executing instructions that have side effects. Okay? Because I mentioned at least two instructions, but there are several, where you execute the instruction or you're in the process of executing an instruction and then there is a page fault in the middle. Okay? So one was you increment a register and move that register value to a region of memory. So if you increment a register and then try to move it to a page, and that page is not there, you will have a page fault. Okay, so you will stop this instruction, fetch the page and re-execute. Okay, but since you have already incremented this register, you don't want to increment it again. So you need to be able to unwind any side effects that an instruction might have, okay, in order to make it completely transparent. Okay, that was one thing. The other thing to keep in mind is page fault is a slow operation. It involves one or more disk IOs. So you don't want to take page faults frequently. The less frequent they are, the better off your process performance is going to be. Okay, so typically page fault frequency should be once every few million instructions. Otherwise you see even that, as we saw in a very simple example, results in approximately a 10% slowdown. Okay, anything more frequent will really make your process execution very slow. Okay, so these are all things to keep in mind. And then towards the end of last class, we started talking about page replacement algorithm. Okay? So essentially, whenever there is a page fault and you're fetching a page from disk, you might have to evict a page that is resident in memory. Page replacement policies tell you which page you can choose to evict. Okay? So the decision of which one to throw out to make room for an incoming page is handled by page replacement. Okay? So we looked at two policies. Sorry, we looked at FIFO and we looked at min. Okay, so I worked out an example for FIFO and now the same example we'll do for min. Yeah, min basically says let's look into the future, okay, and then we will evict the page that is going to be accessed the farthest in the future. Okay, and by evicting that we have delayed the page fault to the farthest time, so you are reducing the number of page fault. Okay, so this is basically the example. Okay, so same reference string. A, B, C. A, B, D. Okay. So three frames. Okay, so now we are going to do min. Okay, first we access, initially memory is empty, so first three accesses will be page faults. In this reference string, you access A, you fetch A, then you access B, it's not in RAM, you fetch B, you access C, it's not in memory. Okay, so now you filled up RAM. At this point, page replacement will kick in whenever there is a page fault. Okay, so this is until now you've just been warming up your RAM. So you access A. A is in memory, so there's nothing to do. Okay, no page fault. You access B. B is also resident in RAM. Again, nothing to do. Okay, now you access D. This is going to be a page fault. Okay, because D is not resident in memory. Now we have to decide which of these three pages to access or to evict. So what we will do is we'll look into the future and say, when is A accessed next? It's accessed one page later, one reference later. Where is B accessed? That's accessed three page references laid down. And then C is accessed farthest into the future. So that's here. So you will replace C. Okay. So A, B, D, as someone pointed out. So C goes out, D comes in. Okay. So now you again look at A. A is in memory, nothing to do. Look at D, it's also in memory, nothing to do. You see B, still resident. The next page fault occurs here. Okay. So you again say that you have to look at these three and replay something. You only know one more reference. Okay, so B is something you don't throw out. Between A and D, we don't know which one is because you don't have any future information. So you can pick either one. Okay, at this point. So let's pick A. So that makes it C, B, D. Okay, and then you access B again. So the number of page faults is down to 5. Okay, last time when we did it, we had 9 page faults. Okay. So this kind of exercise you should be able to figure out. Given a reference stream, given some number of pages, or not pages, rather frames, figure out what the memory contents are, what a certain policy would do. Yes?
But this would never work because you can't look in the future, you said, right?
Yes. In practice, so this is a good mix for good exam questions, but doesn't work for operating system. Okay. So you cannot really look into the future. The OS has no information about what future accesses are. Okay, it's an optimal policy. You can do no better. Okay, you can never design a policy that will give you any less page faults. But it's completely impractical because typically OSs won't know. OS doesn't know, process doesn't know, user doesn't know. Nobody exactly knows what is going to happen as far as process execution goes. Okay, so you don't know the future access pattern. Alright? So not optimal but not feasible. Okay, so next policy is LRU. So now, just as when we did CPU scheduling, we did shortest job first, which had optimal waiting time, but was also not feasible. Then we tried to approximate it. Okay, we approximated it with MLFQ, multi-level feedback queue. Okay, which tried to eliminate the drawback and yet retain some of the advantages. We want to do the same thing here. Okay, the good thing about MIN is that it is optimal. It gives you the fewest page faults. So it's something we want to approximate, but we clearly don't want this requirement that says you need to know what the future is going to look like. Okay, so how do we do that? So the next policy we'll look at is what is called LRU, least recently used. Okay, this is the policy. This policy or some variant of it is used in most operating systems today. Okay, so LRU is widely used. We'll see several implementations of LRU today. Let's first start with basic LRU. Okay, so now LRU says instead of looking into the future, let's look at the past. Okay, so the assumption we will make is that the recent past is a good indication of the near future. Okay, that the recent past predicts what the future is going to look like. Why is this a good assumption? We talked about locality of reference. Okay, if you think about temporal and spatial locality, we said when you are working on some pages, when a process works on some pages, it will continue to work on those pages for some time. That's the working set. Okay, temporal locality says if you access a page, you will access it again in the near future. Spatial locality says if you access a page, you may access some pages nearby. Okay, so whatever the process has been doing in the recent past is often a reasonable predictor of what it is likely to do, what pages it's likely to access in the near future. Okay? So the past we know perfectly, the future we don't. So let's look at the past and try to do replacement based on that. And if past is indeed a predictor of the future, this policy will approximate what MIN would have done. MIN requires future knowledge. Here we basically say that if the past is a sort of a mirror image of what the future looks like, then we can try to do the same thing with just by looking at past information. So this is usage based. FIFO also looks at the past, but it throws out the oldest page and doesn't pay any attention to what pages are getting used. Okay, the oldest page may still be actively used, so throwing that out is maybe a problem. Least recently used basically say look at the past and throw out the page that was accessed or used the farthest in the past. Okay, so you actually look at the reference stream and figure out what pages are getting used and throw the one that was least recently used. Okay, same reference stream here. So we are going to do this exercise for LRU. Is the policy clear? Anything I should clarify? Yes, no. Okay, we are doing exactly what Min would do. You have a question?
Is it going to have to like make another list
to of past? Yeah. So we'll look at LRU implementation. That's a good question. Is it going to keep track of a list? How does it know which was the least recently used page? Okay. So we will see several implementations. Some will be more efficient than others. Okay, so that's what the rest of the class is going to be. Yeah, but let's just first ask whether the policy is clear. There's some hand here. I don't know if somebody had a question. Okay, so we are now going to redo this exercise. Okay, so the first three accesses, since you start with empty memory, okay, there's nothing to do. All of those three will be page faults. Then you access A. A is already in memory, no page fault. Access B. B is also in memory, no page fault. Okay, now you come to D. Okay, D is not in RAM, so that's a page fault. So now instead of looking in the future, we look at the past. Saying, of the three pages, A, B and C, which one was accessed the farthest in the past? Okay, B was accessed here, A here and C. C is the oldest page, or least recently, not the oldest page, least recently used page. So we will discard C and replace it with D. Okay. So then you access A, it's in RAM. You access D, also in RAM. You access B, also in memory. Okay, so next three accesses, you just access A, D, B, they are all here. So there's nothing to do. Okay, then you go access C. That's a page fault. So now you again look back and say which page should we evict, okay, which is the least recently used page. So B is accessed here, D is accessed here, A is accessed. So A is the least recently used page. So A is going to go out and get replaced with B. Okay? And then B gets accessed and it's already in memory. So in this particular reference stream, LRU is actually matching the performance of FIFO. Okay? So in this case it turns out that for this particular reference stream, the past was actually a very good predictor of the future. Typically LRU will not completely match the performance of min, but it will approximately match the performance. Okay? But in this case, this example, it just happened to do it exactly. Okay? Any questions on this? There are several more, but what is more interesting is to look at variants of LRU. Okay, so because this is something that is feasible to implement, this is what most operating systems do, but then there are several tweaks, that's what we will look at. So it's not like there will be many more, but there will be some variants, okay, which will give us different policies. But before, okay, so here is an example of when LRU performs badly. Okay, so this is a good example of LRU doing exactly the wrong thing. A different reference stream. Okay, I'm not going to work through it. We'll just do it here. So A is a page fault. B is a page fault. C is a page fault. Okay. And then you go A is still in memory. B is still in memory. So D is going to be a page fault. Okay. So you will take D and you will evict C because this is the page fault. You look at this. This is the least recently used page. So you go and you throw D out. Okay, then you access A, D, B, which are all in memory. Wait, this doesn't make sense. I think that's the... Sorry? No, this is not the example. I will construct the example on the board. think there is a mistake there. The example is actually very simple. It doesn't look like it. So this is the example. You cycle between pages. Okay, A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, or three frames. You always throw out the wrong frame at the wrong time. So this is basically a page fault. Okay. The first three things are definitely page fault. So you get A, B. Okay. So now you basically have to bring D in. What do you evict? You'll evict A. That's the least recently used page. So you say DBC. Okay. So you just evicted A. And now you access A again. Okay. So that's again a page fault. Okay. So what do you evict? You look back and say which is the oldest page or least recently used page between D, B and C. B, okay. So you just throw out D and you access B again. Okay. Whatever you are evicting or accessing next. Okay, so that's a page fault. You'll go and evict, you look back, C is the oldest page, you'll access to C. Okay, so C goes out, B comes in. Whatever goes out gets accessed next. So every reference is a page fault, as you will see. Just work through this. Basically, because you are accessing them in a cyclic manner, the page that is actually thrown out gets accessed next. So you are basically just cycling through, and every single reference here becomes a page fault. Okay. So here, LRU actually diverges from opt or min. Okay. If you had some knowledge of the future, when it was time to replace D, you wouldn't replace A because that was the least recently accessed page. But if you look at the future, as the page you are exactly going to access next. Okay? So you would have actually done this differently had you done min as opposed to LRE. Okay, is that clear? Okay. Alright, so now I will show you another example. We'll work through that example. These are actually two examples. Okay, it's the formatting is messed up. So that's the reference stream. We want to do FIFO. The first case we have three frames, in the second case we have four. Okay? So reference stream with FIFO. First we have memory with three frames, and then we say we allocate four frames to this process. Okay, so what should we expect as you increase the amount of memory allocated to a process in terms of number of page faults?
Should be less.
Okay, so as intuition says, you give more memory to a process, it faults less because you can hold more pages. Okay, so now let's do this and verify. So you'll have to work this out. Page fault? Yes. The first three are easy. So I'm just going to say yes. Okay. This is FIFO. Okay. Page fault. D is not in memory. So what do we replace? First page that came in of these three. A. Okay, so let it page fault? Yes. Now what do we replace? B. Okay, so this one is gone. these two stay the same. Okay. B is a page fault. Okay, so we are going to throw out C. Yes. So we will throw out D. Okay. A is a page fault. No, A is not a page fault. B is not a page fault. Okay, because A and B are here. This is going to be the next page fault. What do we replace? We're going to replace. You look back and say which one came in first. Okay, so E came in here, B came in here, and A came in here. Okay? So A goes out. Yes? So A gets replaced by C. Okay, so D is a page fault. You look back and say which one is the oldest page. Okay, E came in here. Okay, C came in, where did C came in right there. Okay, E came in here and B came here. Okay, so B is the oldest page. Okay, so B, it's a page fault also. Okay. No, that's not a page fault, E is already in. Okay, so how many do we have? 9 page fault. Okay. So what happens when we add a page? Okay. Page fault. Okay. Is that a page fault? No, it's not. It's not a page fault. This is the next page fault. What will we replace here? Replace A. Okay. So this is going to be another page fault. So what goes out? E came in here. I think B came in right there. Okay, so B is the oldest page. Okay. Okay. Page fault as well. What's the oldest page? C. What's the oldest page now? D. So page fault. E is the oldest page. Okay, what's this? It's also page fault. Okay. So how many do we have now? Ten. That makes sense? Yes? Increased RAM and number of page faults went up. Not intuitive.
But that's because this policy sucks.
Yeah, but why would should it actually increase the page fault when you give more memory? So this is a counterintuitive result. So this got back in 1960s actually, and they tried some policies and they gave more memory and pages. I mean, processes started doing worse, not better. Okay, so nobody exactly knew what was going on. So this is actually called this phenomenon is called Bell-Eddy's anomaly. named after this person, Les Belledi, who actually discovered this when playing with operating system page replacement policies. So essentially what happens here is whenever you, that this is not universally true. It's not that every time you, if you give it 5 frames that it will fault even more. But there will be some cases where you give more process pages to a process and it actually starts behaving worse. Okay? And not all policies have this, this kind of behavior. Okay? But some do. Those are the ones that the OS should actually avoid. Yeah, because you get these weird cases where you feel like the process is faulting, let's give it some more RAM and it does work. Yeah, so you better off not doing anything. Okay. You can repeat the same example with LRU, okay, which I am not going to do here, but you will find out that LRU does not have this behavior. Okay, you give it one more frame, it will actually do better, not worse. Okay, so some policies don't suffer from this anomaly. Okay, FIFO is one policy that does suffer from it. There are several others that also suffer from Belledi's anomaly. The two that don't, opt or rather min doesn't do that, neither does LRU. Okay. Now it turns out that the reason LRU doesn't have this problem is if you look at the contents of memory, okay, the reason you shouldn't have erased the previous example with 3 frames, but what was actually happening, okay, the reason these two are together is if you look at the contents of memory here and the contents of memory here, you will see that at any point they are totally different. Okay, they don't match up at all. Okay, so if you actually look at this column with 4 frames and this same column with 3 frames, you will see the pages that are resident in RAM have no correlation to the pages that were resident when you had 3 frames. But if you look at LRU, okay, we won't work through this, but if you look at LRU, you will find that whenever you add frames, whatever you have here, okay, so this will be a superset of the content there, meaning that you will have the same number of pages and you may have some more. Okay. So if your policy actually has this property where the memory, as the memory grows, you have the same pages that you had before, but then you can keep a few more in memory, then you will not have more page faults. Your page faults will strictly decrease. Okay, because if this one had a page fault, you might not have it because you have. But it will never be the case that when you give more memory, you have a page fault that did not occur there, because if the page wasn't present here, it will not be present there either. Because if the larger number of pages don't have it, the smaller number won't. Okay. Now this, I won't prove this or go through an elaborate example, but that's really there was a paper that was written on this anomaly, and the idea that was proposed was any policy wherein the memory contents of the process becomes a superset as you add more pages, but doesn't change completely. It's a strict superset. You will always have those pages and some more. Okay. So if you have that property, then you will never have Belledi's anomaly. It was proven that LRU actually has this property. It was also shown that min has that property. I will not prove it, neither are you expected to know the proof, but you can do proof by example, okay, which is not really a proof at all, but it's just a way to convince yourself. Okay, so you can actually try this out and see why you will, and convince yourself that property holds you. Okay, so the only thing to keep in mind is that the intuition that which tells us that if you give a process more memory, it will fault less, is not always true. It may be generally true. It's always true from some policies. For others, it may be true sometimes, but in some cases, they may actually fault more. Okay? And FIFO is one such policy that suffers from it. There are some others as well. Okay? So that's all we are going to say about page replacement. And we'll now come to implementing LRU. All of the questions, there was a question earlier saying, what do we need to do to figure out which is the least recently used page. Here we could actually look at the reference stream and figure this out. What is the OS to do? How does it keep track of this information? Is the problem clear? Suppose you are to implement LRU policy in your kernel. Okay, what information do you keep about each page that tells you which is the least recently used page? What is the simplest thing you can do? process, but each process has, let's say, 100 pages. You need to track the least recently used page. How do we do it? Any thoughts?
Do you keep a queue and you move something ahead of the queue each time?
You could do that.
But would that be too slow?
It will be too slow. We'll come to that in the next slide. That is indeed a solution. But there's something even simpler thing you can do, yes. Timestamp. Why don't we just track for every page, keep a timestamp. The timestamp tells you when it was accessed. Okay? Now if you want to throw out a page, look at the timestamps. Every time you access a page, you update the timestamp. So now you know the last access time of every page. Okay? You want to evict a page, find the page that was accessed last and throw it out.
But wouldn't you need to work through all the pages to do that? Wouldn't that be...
Yes, I mean, there are always complexity issues. I'm just thinking of solutions and then we'll say that doesn't quite work because of efficiency reasons. Okay? So timestamping is the simplest mechanism. Now there are a few problems with timestamps. Okay. The first problem is that it's not the eviction which is a problem, which is also maybe an issue. But the bigger problem is that every time you access a page, you have to go and update a timestamp. Okay. So that if the timestamp is maintained in the page itself, every memory access becomes two memory accesses. Because updating the timestamp is a memory access. Okay, factor of two slow down. Okay, so we don't really want that. Okay, so you could keep precise timestamps, but then you are in trouble in terms of performance. Okay, that's one problem. Second problem is implementation efficiency, which is if I have to evict a page and you have to scan all the pages. Okay, that's a linear time algorithm. Okay, order of n, not good either. Okay, so there are these two problems with just maintaining timestamps. So this is basically saying timestamping is a problem. Next problem is you keep a sorted list. You don't keep timestamps, but then let's keep a list that is sorted in access order. Every time you access a page, you move it to the front of the list, saying that's the most recently accessed page, not the least. Okay. So now eviction is constant time. You want to evict a page, the page that is at the end of the queue is one that was accessed the farthest in the past, because otherwise it would have moved to some other point in the queue. Okay. Eviction is not a problem, constant time. Okay, but again, memory updates are a problem. Okay. So if you keep a doubly linked list, that is, you have to modify six pointers. Okay, if you take a page, if you do anything with doubly linked list, if you take a page and move it to the front, there's manipulation of six pointers in the linked list. Every memory access becomes seven memory accesses. Okay, factor of seven slowdown. Even worse. Okay. So although we need to implement cache replacement policies, the simple solutions have a significant drawback. Okay? They can actually impose dramatic slowdown on your performance. Okay? So no real operating system will actually do either of these two. Okay? Because you get very severe slowdown. They look sound drier, fine at data structures and whatnot, but in terms of implementation, the memory accesses are very, very frequent. Almost every instruction does memory accesses. So if you have factor of 7 slowdown, that doesn't quite work. Okay, so we need to have more efficient implementations of LRU. Okay. So the only way we can actually do this is to have approximation. There is no efficient way to implement real LRU. These are the two ways to do it, and both of them suffer from significant problems. Okay, so we need to come up with approximations. Okay, so for the rest of this class, we'll look at variants of LRU that somehow approximate the behavior and yet are efficient. And there are several variants. They will have different properties in terms of efficiency, accuracy, etc. Okay, so here are actually two different variants. Okay, so well, first we can say let's use the timestamping mechanisms, but let's try to make it more efficient. Let's add some hardware support. Okay, we'll make it more efficient. But we will approximate it, because real timestamps are going to be expensive. There's no real hardware mechanism to do that. So how do we do it more efficiently? Okay. So let me start with a very crude approximation, then we can refine it a little bit. So instead of a timestamp, what's a timestamp? It's an integer. Yeah, that is basically the value of your clock. Okay, integer has some number of bits. Yeah, so let's make, instead of having a 32-bit clock, which is, let's say, a 32-bit machine, your integers are 32-bit, clock value is 32-bit, let's have fewer bits for your clock value. Okay. The extreme case, let's assume that your clock is 1 bit. Okay, the clock value is either 0 or 1. The timestamp is either 0 or 1. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, so basically what we will do is we will partition all of the pages. Okay, so the intuition really is as you reduce the number of bits, your time stamp becomes more approximate or more crude. Okay, so let's start with 32-bit clock. 32-bit clock has resolution, let's say, of 1 second. It ticks every second. Every time it ticks, so basically you have taken time and you have chopped it up into 1 second intervals. Okay, that's 32 bits. Okay, so all the memory accesses within 1 second will all have the same timestamp if you have a 32-bit clock that ticks every second. Okay, if you have a clock that ticks every millisecond, all accesses that are within that 1 millisecond interval will have the same timestamp. So all clocks are integer values. Okay, so they will have a finite precision. Don't have infinite precision clock. Okay? So suppose we don't do 32 bits, let's say we do smaller number of bits. Okay, so in particular, let's say you can do 2-bit clock. A 2-bit clock can have value 00, 01, 10, 11. Okay, that's what our clock values can be. Okay, so what does this allow us to do? It allows us to partition time into 4 intervals. Okay, 32-bit clock allowed us to partition time into 1 second intervals, of which there are 2 to the 32 such intervals. Okay, a 2-bit clock allows us to partition time into 4 intervals. Okay, with those 4 values. Okay, and what we do with it is up to us. So we can say, you can think of this as, you can decide how you want to use that clock. You can say, let's say, you can say I partition time as follows. That's not 10 minutes, let's say seconds. So this is how I can use this clock. Okay, anything, all pages that were accessed in the last second get a value time stamp of 00. Okay. All of the other way around, 11, mostly higher values. Okay. Anything that was accessed 10 seconds before this interval gets value 10. Okay. All of the pages that were accessed. Okay. All of the pages that were accessed here get this value. Everything else all the way to minus infinity, okay, 00. Okay, so what we have done is essentially we said look at everything from now until whenever this machine booted up, that's the time we have to track. Okay, and that period we will chop it up into some arbitrary intervals. Each interval will be given a timestamp. Okay, so we will basically, and smaller, lower timestamps indicate further periods that are farther away in the past. Okay, so with a 2-bit timestamp, we can track 4 intervals. What this interval is up to us to define. Okay, because this is not a real clock, it's an abstract version of a clock. Okay, so if you have a 1-bit timestamp, okay, we can track 2 intervals. Okay, so because that's the value can be either 0 or 1, so the only 2 intervals are what we will call new pages and old pages. Okay, new pages will have timestamp of 1, old pages will have timestamp of 0. Okay, how to define new or old, or how, what does this period and what does that period, that's all up to us. Okay, but we can essentially track with a 1-bit timestamp 2 intervals in the past. Okay, and anything in the more recent one, we will call them new pages or young pages. Anything in the previous one, we will call old pages. Okay, so if you take all the pages in memory, Okay. If they were accessed in this interval, they'll get a timestamp of 1. If they were accessed in that interval, they'll get a timestamp of 0. Okay. Now, if you want to evict a page, you always evict the least recently used page, which means you can take any page with a timestamp of 0 and evict it. The reason this is an approximation is there may be 1,000 pages in this list. We cannot exactly distinguish which is the really the oldest page. All we know is they were all approximately accessed in this long period. We cannot distinguish because our clock precision is very low. It has a clock only takes two values, 0 or 1. Okay, it's a 1-bit clock. Yes, question.
Don't we need to go through all the pages each time we increment this bit, though?
Isn't we'll come to all of that. Okay, so now why do we care? Why should we make clocks this imprecise? If you have 1-bit clock, you can actually implement this in hardware. Okay, in particular, you can keep that 1-bit in the page table or in the TLB. Okay, anyway, to access your memory, you have to go and look up a page table. Yeah, so if you can look up the page table, you can flip a bit in hardware when you are doing that lookup without any performance slowdown. If this page table entry is in the TLB, all you are doing is while you are accessing it, you flip a bit. Okay, you change the bit from 0 to 1 saying I just accessed it, the page becomes new. Okay, similarly, you can go and flip some bits making pages old every so often if you so want. So if you implement this form of very crude LRU, which uses 1-bit timestamps, then you can do this in hardware with no performance slowdown whatsoever. Okay. Now the problem is this is a very crude approximation of LRU. Okay. It has taken a whole bunch of pages that are in this interval and given them the same timestamp. So you really no longer know which is the oldest page. If you have precise timestamps, you actually know which is the really the least recently used page. Here you don't. You just have a group of pages that all seem to have the same timestamp. You cannot tell. Okay? So, depending on what. So, now you could, of course, do 2-bit timestamp. It makes the page. You can keep 2 bits in your page table instead of 1-bit. That gives you these 4 values. Okay? But now you have to have the logic to decide which, how to update the timestamps and so on. Okay, so keeping a few bits for your timestamp, eminently feasible, doable in hardware, no performance penalty, okay, but very crude LRU implementation. Okay, is that clear? Any questions on this? Okay. So this technique, the one that keeps 1-bit timestamp, is called clock, okay, or second chance. Is an approximation of LRU. And the way this is implemented is actually illustrated with a picture. Okay, let me just mention it, then I'll go through it. So, essentially you keep your pages in a linked list of some sort. So you keep this bit also in the page table. Every time your memory accesses, you just set the bit. Okay, so just keep doing this. Okay, whenever you have a page fault, we are going to essentially scan through these pages which are in a circular list looking for a page with reference bit 0. As soon as you find it, you evict it because that's basically the least recently accessed page. Anything you access since the previous page fault will essentially have a timestamp of 1, okay, because you would have gone and updated the page table entries for those pages. Okay, so let's go through an example here. Okay, so that is basically showing you a linked list of pages. Okay, the top figure there. Okay, and there are some bits that are set to 1, some bits that are set to 0. Okay, so long as there is no page fault, the process keeps making memory accesses that result in page table accesses. Okay, and you keep flipping the bit to 1. So some of those bits will turn to 1. Okay, so at some point you are going to have a page fault. At this point you need to find the oldest page. Okay. So you basically take that pointer there and you start scanning through the list. Okay? As you scan, you keep resetting bits. Okay? So the first page has a bit of 1. That's a new page. Okay? You just set the bit to 0 saying it no longer is a new page. Okay? Then you go to the next one that also has a bit of 1. You set that. Then you come to the next one that already has a bit of 0. Okay? So you found a page that's old, you just evict it. Okay? Bring in a new page and that page gets a bit of 1. So you keep doing this. Okay? Now if it so happens that all of those pages are in the working set, and all of them have their bit set to 1, you will scan through the whole list, setting all the bits to 0. Okay, and then you will cycle back and you will be back to where you started from. There is all the pages basically are in this category. Okay, there is no page here if you actually have your exact working set. You set reset all their bits to 0 and then essentially you are thrown out a page at random at this point. Okay, but you can always find a page to evict even if all the bits are set to 1, because you will cycle through ones resetting the bits. In the next cycle, the first page that you will find will have a bit of 0. Okay, you evict that page. Okay, so this algorithm has a complexity of up to order n on a page fault. Okay, because you might have to cycle through the whole list looking for a page with bit 0. So you keep them in a linked list. Okay, but page faults are rare, so we are willing to pay that price because they don't happen frequently. But every memory access is very, very efficient because there is nothing to update in software. You are going to essentially depend on hardware to flip this bit in the page table for us. Okay, so there's no slowdown when there are no page faults, but it will be slow when there is a page fault, and that may be okay. Okay, that those are the trade-offs that you make. Okay, your efficient implementation on the fast path when there is no page fault, but you pay for a little bit of slowdown on the slow path when you get a page fault. So anyway, 25 milliseconds of disk I/O time, you throw in 1 millisecond to scan the list, doesn't make things very bad. Okay? Any questions on this? Yes?
Maybe it's not a very good policy because you could be evicting pages that might still be in use, so you don't really know what.
Yes. So the point is this a good policy or not? It is a very crude approximation of LRU. Really, you may be evicting pages. I mean, just because a bit here is set to 0 on a page, it doesn't mean that the page is not in use. It just means that its bit was set to 0 when the previous page fault occurred. Okay, the page may still be in use. Okay, so you might evict sometimes pages that are still in use. That said, if the page actually is in use between two page faults, its bit would flip to 1 and it will not get evicted because it would have actually accessed the page table and you set to it to 1. Okay, but every time you access a page, when you execute an instruction, you will access the page table and flip the bit. Any questions on this? Okay. So there's one more that I'm going to talk about quickly, and then we'll talk about some other implementation issue. So here we will keep 2 bits with us. Okay. But it's not a 2-bit clock, it's still a 1-bit clock. But we keep a second bit to tell us something more about the page. Okay? In particular, the second bit will tell us if the page is dirty or not. Okay, whether the page was updated or not. Okay, so what does this tell us? Okay, what if a page is dirty? Why do we care? So think about the page fault overhead if you are evicting a dirty page, versus the page fault overhead if you are evicting a page that is not dirty. A page that is dirty is one that was written to in RAM. Okay, that's the definition of a dirty page. So what's the difference between evicting a dirty page versus evicting a page that is not updated since it was fetched from disk? Yeah. A dirty page has to be Yes. Okay, if a page is dirty, remember what I said last time was you always have a copy of all the pages on disk of a process. Okay? Now once you fetch a page from disk to memory, if it has been updated, if you want to evict it, you first have to write it back to disk. Only then can you evict it because the copy on disk is old. You have a newer copy in RAM. Okay? So what does this tell us? So you have to write it out, so what? What does this do to the page fault overhead?
It
makes it take longer. So page fault overhead is 2x if you evict a dirty page, because you have to write out the page that's going out and read in the page that is coming in, 2 disk IOs. If you evicted a page that is not dirty, the copy that's on disk and the copy that's in RAM are identical. So there's nothing to write out. You can just bring in a page and overwrite the old page. Okay, so what does this do tell us? What should we prefer? Okay, so you prefer to evict a page that is not dirty. Okay. Now remember that the LRU policy is only tracking which page was least recently used. It doesn't track which page is dirty and which page is not. It may be that the least recently used page has been returned to. Okay, so it will take you twice as long to evict that page. If the one that is one before that least recently used page is not dirty, you will actually have faster page fault service rate. Okay. So what we need to do is not only track which is the least recently used page, but also track which pages have been updated in RAM and which pages haven't been. Okay. So that's essentially what this policy does. There are two bits that are kept. One is called the read modify bit, which says has the page been modified or not. The other is the old bit, which says are the pages young or old. Okay. So now there are pages are can be of four types. Okay, so there are pages that will have timestamp of 00. This is old, not dirty, to 11, which says new and dirty. Okay, so you have 01. Old dirty, 10 which says new, not dirty. Okay. So pages can fall into these four categories, whether it's old or new, or whether dirty or not dirty. Okay, this is the ideal page to throw out. It's an old page and it's not been modified. Okay, this is the worst possible page to throw out. It's a new page, which means it's in active use, and it's also dirty, which means it's been updated. Okay, so now we'll keep two bits. Every time you write to a page, you will go and update the page table, that bit in the page table which indicates is modified. And every time you access a page, you will set the bit saying it's new. Okay. So this policy is again going to do the same thing. It's going to scan, but now it is going to do something more. Okay. As it scans, if the new bit is set, it will reset it. But if the dirty bit is set, okay, you will basically just trigger a disk IO saying go write it out in the background. Okay, so the next time you try to evict this page, it should no longer be dirty. Okay, dirty pages eventually have to be written out to disk. Okay, but you don't do it at eviction time. You just trigger a background IO process that goes and says, go write this page out so that it now becomes a candidate for eviction in the future. Okay, so as you cycle through, you will actually go and look at the modify bit. If it's set to 1, you will basically hand this page off to a background process saying, go write it out, okay, to swap space. Okay. So eventually some of these pages will get written out and that bit will flip again, saying it's no longer dirty. They'll become candidates for eviction. Okay, so you cycle through and you sort of send some pages off that have been dirty to a process to write it out. You take the ones which are new, you reset the bit. Okay, if you find a page like this which has 00, you immediately evict it. Okay, so you trigger some IO, you flip some bits, and you also find a page to evict. Okay, so you'll cycle through doing these kinds of things. Okay. Yes.
What if you had all pages that were 01 to trigger all kinds of?
Yes. So what happens if you have all pages 01 or all pages 11? Okay. So this is the worst possible case. Okay. If you have all pages 11, you'll go through the whole list, okay, and you will flip this bit. They'll become 01. Okay. The second cycle, you'll go through the list again, saying pages are all old, but they are all dirty. So you'll basically go through the second time and start writing them out. Okay? And you'll go through the list and come back. And then once some of those pages have been written out, some of them will turn 00. So on the third chance, you'll always find a page to edit. Okay? First time around, you'll just change this bit. Second time around, you'll try to write them out. Third time around, you'll succeed finding at least one page that has gotten written out. So you are guaranteed that in three cycles, okay, that was the property that was mentioned here, by the third pass, at least some of your pages have been written out. So you will find some pages to have it. Okay, so it's never clear that in the first cycle itself you will find anything, because you might have all pages that have this timestamp on them. Okay, any questions on this? So these are the kinds of policies that are actually implemented in operating system. Okay, they are fairly crude approximations. Okay, they sort of do what LRU does, but by no means are they accurate. Okay, they have to pay very careful attention to efficiency. Okay, because you cannot have slowdowns, otherwise nobody will want to buy your operating system or use it. Okay. And wherever possible, you use hardware features. If your hardware actually supports additional bits in the page table, you use one of those bits or two of those bits to keep track of ages of pages, when they were used, whether they are modified, and so on. Okay. So that is basically, those are all approximations of LRU. And now we are going to look at a few other things that we have glossed over. In particular, how many pages to assign to any process. Okay, how do you decide what is the working set size of a process, and what happens if the working set is something you cannot satisfy. So what this figure is showing is, on the x-axis, it shows the degree of multiprogramming, how many processes you have in the system. On the y-axis, you basically are showing overall utilization of the CPU. Okay. So the curve, initially, as you increase the number of processes, the utilization or the load on your machine keeps going up. Because there are more processes, they are doing more work, the CPU is more busy. Okay. But after a while, you essentially see the performance basically just tanks. I mean, just goes down to zero. The utilization or the load on the CPU actually drops as you increase the number of processes beyond a point. Okay. This is true on any machine that supports multiprogramming. Okay. Now this condition is referred to as thrashing. Okay. And the reason it occurs is that you have overcommitted memory. Because you started so many processes, you do not have enough physical RAM to keep the working set of each process. Okay. You cannot keep the working set of a process, it is going to fault very frequently. If it falls very frequently, most of your processes will just spend their time doing page faults. Page faults are I/O. There's nothing to execute. If they're all trying to do page faults and read their pages, there's nothing to execute on the CPU. The moment you execute a few more instructions, there's another page fault. So processes enter a regime where they spend all their time faulting and very little time doing any useful execution. Okay? If they spend very little time doing useful execution, the utilization will just drop. So this basically curve shows you that until a point, you can have enough processes make good use of your machine. Beyond a point, you'll basically just hear your disk spinning. If you ever have either run a very large process or lots of processes, you hear a lot of disk activity. That's because you're actually swapping a lot. It means that your memory has gotten overcommitted. So that's basically what this behavior is. Okay, so thrashing is basically a scenario where memory is overcommitted and pages processes are faulting frequently. It is not a regime you want to be in. Okay, the only, as I was mentioning last time, only two solutions are: you need more memory on your machine, or you have to reduce the number of processes. You have to terminate some applications to come back, to reduce the degree of multiprogramming, so you are back in this regime. Okay, where you can actually fault less. Yeah. So the question then is, how do you ensure, okay, first of all, that you have enough memory for the working set? How do you even decide what the working set is? It's not like you start up Firefox and the OS knows the working set is 113 pages. Okay, that information is not known. You have to determine this dynamically. Okay, so all of these questions we have to look at. Okay, so now we are going to think about how to allocate memory to processes. How many pages to commit to a process, so that at least his working set can be kept in RAM. And then we'll look at how do you do replacement also. Okay. So the simplest technique that you can use is what is called proportional allocation. The number of pages committed to a process is proportional to its virtual address size. Okay, so if the virtual address space, let's say there are two processes, one has a virtual address space of 100 megabytes, and the other has 200 megabytes, you will commit twice as many frames to this process than this process. Okay, that's essentially what that equation says. Okay, so it's the size of this, or summation of all the sizes, times RAM. It's the size of a process I over the total size of all processes, timestamp. This is the number amount of RAM you are going to commit to a process. Yeah, the intuition is larger the process, the larger might be its working set size. So you allocate more frames to that process. Okay, is that clear? Yes. Okay. So let's go with that for now. We'll come back to that. And then now let's assume that you are using LRU, okay, some form of LRU. And then we have to ask, how do you now decide pages, how to evict pages? Okay, we looked at implementation, but do it now, do it on a global level or a local level? Okay, global page replacement essentially says put all the pages of all processes on one giant list, okay, and then evict the least recently used page using whatever approximation of LRU you are using. It's called global replacement. So if process I faults, you might evict a page belonging to process J because that just happens to be the least recently used page. Okay, so page, is that clear? You take all the pages in your system, you put it on one giant list, okay, and sort it in LRU order, okay, and you evict the least recently used page whenever there is a page fault. So what this does is, if process I page faults, somebody else's page may get evicted because that just happens to be the least recent use page. So the advantage is it automatically balances the memory allocation. Okay, because if process I is faulting more, it will start getting more pages at the expense of some other processes. Maybe its working set grew in size, which is why it's faulting. The right thing to do is take some pages away from some other process and give it to this process, which is essentially what global replacement policy does. Yeah, because you will evict someone else's page and thus the working set or the number of frames you have allocated to this process will grow. Okay? That's the good thing, that it can adjust to changes in working sets across processes. Okay, the bad thing is that some process may get affected by bad behavior of some other process. Okay, so suppose I sit in a process and just sit in an infinite loop doing mallocs. Okay, just keep allocating more and more memory. Okay, now suddenly I've taken over the system because everyone else's pages are basically just getting evicted. Okay, so one malicious process can actually impact the performance of other processes in global page replacement. Because you are trying, so the obvious thing that this process actually needs more memory, so it starts evicting someone else's page. Okay, but if this is a malicious process, you can expand your memory footprint at the expense of other processes that are well behaved. Okay, so there is both a good and a bad. The good is you can actually, you are flexible, you can adjust, okay, as your needs change over time. The bad is thrashing may become more likely because one malicious process can basically cause a lot of page faults in other processes by just greedily grabbing pages. Okay, so if processes are well behaved, this is a good policy. Processes cannot trust one another, this is not a good policy because one process can do something that impacts some other process. Okay. So the alternative to global replacement is per process replacement. Okay, in per process replacement, as the name suggests, you essentially keep this LRU list sorted on a per process basis. Okay. If process I faults, you only evict the least recently used page of that process. Okay, other processes are not even considered. Okay, so if you have 10 processes, each of them have their own LRU list. Okay, which only consists of their own pages. So if you fault, you throw out your least recently used page. Other processes are not touched. Okay. So the advantage here is your faulting only impacts your performance. Okay, you fault more, it only gets your pages evicted. Nobody else is actually impacted by this faulting. Okay. The disadvantage is if you are faulting because the OS mistakenly gave you fewer pages than your working set size, there is nothing this does to address that issue. Because you are just evicting your own pages. The better policy is to give you more frames so you'll stop faulting. Okay? So here also there is a good and a bad. The good is a malicious process cannot impact the performance of someone else. It can only hurt its own performance. Okay? The bad is if you really need more pages, the OS has to somehow magically figure that out because you are only impacting your own performance. You're not getting more memory. In global replacement, you evicted someone else's pages and you got more frames. Here, that does not happen. Okay? So if you do per process page replacement, it is very important for the OS to figure out what is the working set size of this process, so that you at least give that process those many pages. Otherwise, it will thrash. Okay, it will just continuously fault. Okay? So for per process replacement, there is this complementary problem of how do we figure out what is the working set size. So if you cannot figure this out, you cannot magically say Firefox needs 26 pages and Word needs 37 pages. There's no way to figure this out. You have to actually figure, look at the process behavior and say what is the working set. Okay? So I will come back to this part. Let me show you a picture of how to do working set. And so here is basically how we can, the OS can determine working set size. Okay, you keep a window, a moving window of some time. Let's say it's 1 minute or 5 minutes. Pick a number. Okay, some tens of seconds. Okay, so if you want to determine the working set size, for that way, over that window, you would figure out what are all the pages that this process accessed. Okay, that's essentially what is shown in this picture. What those numbers are, pages that are being accessed. Each page is numbered. Okay, in our examples, we used A, B, C, D. Here, pages just have numbers. Okay, so your window is time delta. Okay, so you basically, at this point in time, you look delta into the past, which is this time period, and so you say what are the unique pages that were accessed in that time interval. Okay, they just happen to be 1, 2, 5, 6, 7. Okay, we say those are the pages this process is actively working on. Okay, because that working set is pages you actively work on. If you actively work on them, you better be accessing them. Okay, so you actually look at what the process is doing and say that's the working set, so I better give it at least 6 frames, otherwise this process will fault. Okay, and you keep doing this. So when the process moves to this time, you will see that the working set has shrunk to only 2 pages, 3 and 4, because that's the only thing it's accessing. Okay, so at this point, this process will be happy with just 2 frames. It doesn't need any more. It's not working on any more pages. Okay, so working set will change over time. So you have to keep track of the working set size over time. Do it every so often and ensure that if you are doing per process replacement, the policy at least gives this process that many frames, otherwise it will thrash. Okay, is that clear? So essentially the way you determine the working set is you actually look at what the process is accessing, which pages over some time window, and the unique set of pages are its current working set, and you need to at least give it that much memory so that those pages can be in RAM and not on disk. Okay, so now the question is, how do you pick this time window? 30 seconds, 1 second, 1 minute, 1 hour, what's a good value?
Would you look at previous run times of the process to determine?
Should it be different for different processes? Should you pick a one window? What's a good value? How do you decide that?
The more memory they access frequently, the larger the window you want to
get. The larger the window, more pages you may catch as what flag as working set. That should be clear. Right? If you say 1 hour, then you will track all the pages that were accessed over the last 1 hour. Maybe you are not accessing most of them now, but if you access them over the past 1 hour, so that may be too large. If you say 1 millisecond, that may be too small. Okay, because you may be accessing only 2 pages in this 1 millisecond, but over a maybe larger window, you are accessing more pages that you are likely to access again. So you have to pick this window carefully. If you make it too large, you are overcommitting memory. You are slagging more pages belong to the working set than there are in the working set. If it's too small, you are undercommitting. You didn't capture it well. Now it turns out that rather than just making this an art, saying this is generally a good value, you can actually pick this in a better way, which is you basically say, I pick a window value that determines how frequently I can page fault. Okay, so here is sort of an intuition. Let's say one page fault, okay, takes 10 milliseconds to service. Okay, so 10 milliseconds is on a certain frequency clock. If you pick a certain clock value for your CPU, approximately 2 million instructions. Okay, so if you are faulting every 2 million instructions, then you basically have one page fault active at any given time. Okay, you page fault, and by the time you're done, that's approximately 2 million instructions. Okay, so essentially you say, how frequently should I page fault? If I want to page fault every 100 million instructions, you better pick a window at least that large. Okay, so that all the pages that are accessed over that time window have been captured in the working set. Okay, so if all of those pages are in there, then you are not going to fault any more than that. Okay? So you can actually decide how frequently you want to page fault. You don't want to make the page fault rate zero, because then you will overcommit. It's okay to page fault once in a while. Okay? It's not okay to page fault too frequently. So you just figure out what's once in a while. Okay? You want to page fault every 10 million instructions, every 100 million instructions. Okay? Depending on how carefully you want to tweak performance, it may be some millions of instructions. Okay, then you say, how much time does it take you to do that? And then you compare that with the page fault overhead. Say, okay, every 100, if I execute for 1 second, which is 1000 milliseconds, and I spend 10 milliseconds page faulting, I'm only spending 0.1% of my time faulting. That may be okay. Okay, if I spend 20% of my time doing page fault, that's not good. Okay, so you can actually pick these, look at the page fault overhead, look at how what the instructions execution rate is, and make this choice. That will tell you what that delta should be. Okay, so this is basically how some operating systems work. They'll look at current processor families, they'll see how what the execution rate is. They'll say on today's disk it takes approximately this much time. Definitely don't want to spend more than 1% of your time faulting. Okay, 0.1 is better. Anything more than that, you will actually start seeing problems. And you say, I only want to fault 0.1% of the time, how many instructions should I execute before I see a page fault? If I have that many instructions, then how much time does it take me to execute? That's my window. Okay, so I better have all of the pages within those many million instructions all kept in RAM, otherwise I'll fault. Okay, so that's how you can actually go about choosing this delta. Okay, so there are all these complexities. The takeaway is that you start with the basic notion of LRU. Okay? And then when your time comes to implement it, there is efficiency of LRU itself. Okay? And then there are all these other issues. Okay, how do you decide how much frames to give within LRU? How do you ensure that the page fault rate is low, you are not thrashing, and so on. Okay? So designing memory managers is not a trivial task. There are all these things you have to keep in mind from an efficiency perspective. Okay? And there are still new policies that people are designing. Okay, if you look at the literature, every so often there's a new memory manager somebody comes up with. Yeah, because it's hard to get it right. As access pattern changes, new tweaks have to be made. Okay? So this is basically what we will have to say about memory management. Okay, although exam 1 was just done, exam 2 is going to be essentially memory management. Okay, all of the material since contiguous allocation through LRU and so on. Okay, the last component of the course is going to be storage and file systems and some elements of networking. That's material for the final. Okay, so exam 2, which is still 2 or 3 weeks away, is going to be mostly on memory management. This is something to keep in mind. And so is lab, the next lab. Okay, that's also on memory management. Yeah, so let's stop here.